Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario. You like how I'm Mark again, right?
Yeah. You're not
here
Ryan anymore.
In Toronto, Ontario, Canada, I'm celebrating being Mark again.
Woo!
Cindy's like, what the hell? What are you guys talking about?
Well, I'm not sure if that episode has been released yet.
It hasn't
so,
been.
Yeah, some people don't know. Well, hey, everyone, it's Amanda. Remember the time that I was Susan, though?
Do I remember? Yeah.
I'm Susan. You're Ryan. No, we had. We had a guest on recently who she came to the Canadian Massage Conference the first year we did it back in person. Her name is Joanna. And for some reason, she could not remember Mark's name.
It's so
she
really was, easy.
She emailed me.
To know
and
why.
She was like, what was his name again? Was it Ryan? So for the entire episode, we called Mark Ryan. That'll be coming out soon.
Someone else emailed us about the podcast. It's really funny. They totally got, I think, my name wrong, your name wrong. They got someone's name wrong. And I responded back. I'm like, I think this was a misdirected email because there's no one named so-and-so that works here.
We've gotten
I was just
quite
being
a
jerk.
Few of those.
I shouldn't have been a jerk, but I just felt like being a jerk in that moment.
Well, we got one that was addressed
jerk.
To Mark.
Jerk
and I think I've told this story before. It was addressed to Mark and I won't say the other name because the other name is actually an RMT and an RMT that I know, and I have no idea
how... Yeah, they used that person's first and last name.
Yeah, I have no idea how they connected that person with our podcast.
It was weird.
Like, that person has never been on our podcast.
Nope.
I know her,
it was
but
like,
we're not friends.
It was like a glitch in the system in
it
Matrix.
Was so weird. Yeah.
It was like there's a cat that walked by twice. A little deja vu. Deja vu? That's a glitch in the system.
Let me introduce our guests. So tonight we have Cindy with us via Zoom, which is insane because Cindy has sat on this couch and been in this office more times than I can count. But this was
you
kind
don't
of
count
a...
too high, do you?
This is an impromptu meeting tonight.
Yeah,
so we decided to do it via
counting.
Zoom since Cindy doesn't live in Toronto. But it kind of was amazing to me that we haven't had Cindy on because the way we met and the way that we work so closely together, I feel like she should have been on the podcast at some time, but we'll get to that.
Were you sitting in a field yesterday wearing a welder's mask?
No, I was in my backyard.
Did you guys get to see some good stuff yesterday where you were?
You know what? Being in St. Catharines, it was cloudy and overcast. So there was just a sliver of the sun that could be seen and then complete cloud cover. But it was really eerie to see the darkness coming in. And then it going completely dark and the backyard lights went on. And then within minutes, like everything opened up again and the birds started singing and it was just really eerie, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah, we had a similar experience here. Like it was pretty cloudy. The clouds would part long enough where we could see. So I had my kids with me, obviously, and we would see like, you know, partial coverage and then the clouds would cover the whole thing and then they would part again and we'd see like, okay, there's a little bit more coverage and then the clouds would come again. So the kids thought it was pretty cool being able to see like the sun slowly disappearing. But yes, when it got to that point of full coverage, it was really cloudy. It was really cloudy. So we couldn't really see anything other than a sliver like you. But yeah, it suddenly got like not just dark and eerie, but the temperature felt like it went from like kind of chilly to like I'm in the Arctic. I was so cold all of a sudden, like chilled to my bone. And, you know, my kids just wanted to like hang out at the playground and swing on the swings. And I'm like, I'm freezing, guys. Let's go inside.
Yeah.
But it was still kind of cool.
Bunch of weirdos.
It was really cool. I was watching the NASA live stream coverage early on in the afternoon. So there was beautiful views from Mexico. And I think it was Texas before it got to, was it Connecticut or New Hampshire, in the path of the totality. Mm-hmm. So it was really neat to be able to see what it would have looked like had it not been cloudy.
Well, our friends in Hamilton got a pretty good view, apparently. So we missed out.
Really? Do they see anything else other than the inside of their empty glasses?
Well, let's do an introduction of our guests before we start. So we've got Cindy with us from St. Catharines. And Cindy is, I mean, a relatively new therapist, I guess, when it comes to all the people she hangs out with. She's the greenest one of our group. So why don't you tell everybody, Cindy, how you became a massage therapist? Because this is not your first career. Mm-hmm. And how long you've been practicing and like what your practice looks like now.
Right on. So up until 2018, when I went back to school as a mature student for massage therapy, I was working in financial services and information technology and thinking to myself, I'm paid really well, but there's no gratification in the job for me. So at the end of the day, it's just I'm working and working for somebody else and collecting that paycheck. And I have a great team that I'm working with because it's always about the people. But I wasn't feeling like I was going to progress anywhere in my career. So I had a conversation with my manager at the bank that I was working at and told her, by this point in time, when we had that dialogue, I'd already registered to go to school in January of 2018. So I'd already made that decision, but I hadn't expressed it to my manager at the time. Mm. And so we sat down and we had a conversation and I told her what my plans were. And I could tell by the expression on her face at that point in time that she wasn't really sure how to react to that, because I'm not sure that she saw that coming. And so she sat with us for a couple of days and she said, okay, we can work with this. Like, I understand you're well-respected. Your team likes you. You've got a lot of institutional knowledge. We'll work around your schedule. So I thought, this is interesting, because I didn't expect that that was going to happen. So we sat down, and once I knew what my school schedule was going to be, then I also knew how I could work around that with my work schedule. So I could still work part-time while I was going to school full-time, and just my job responsibilities changed a bit for the next couple of years.
Did you expect that they were going to ask you to leave? Like, did you expect that you were going to be going back to school?
I assumed that this was a conversation of like, I'm leaving.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
Well, I still have bills to pay, so I still had to work, but I knew it could go one of two ways. One, it would be, no, sorry, Cindy, we can't work with that. Like, we need somebody to be here full time, and this, if it's not going to be you, then sorry, but you need to move on. Or it would be, okay, we'll work around your schedule. So I was going to be okay with whatever decision that was. Mm-hmm. It took a little bit of time to navigate how that was going to work. And it was strange to me, because they knew that ultimately this was going to lead to me leaving within a couple of years after graduating and being in an unrelated field. So it's not like I was going to be moving on to another position within the bank. So I was really happy that they were able to do that, because when I went to school, January 2018 to January 2020, when I was finished school and the exams that had already been scheduled for March and April, when CMTO said, sorry, but no exams are happening this year, then I was, okay, what am I going to do? So you have a little bit of meltdown like my peers did, and but we're like, well, that's out of our control, so we can't do anything about that. But I was able to just amp up my hours working at the bank to help out with what needed to be done as far as deliverables go. And then it also allowed me at that point in time to tell them, okay, I'm probably here another year past what I was going to be. And that worked out. I mean, in the end, it all worked out, because everybody supported the fact that I was going to be moving on to something else anyways. I achieved what I needed to achieve for the deliverables that were set for me from a technology point of view. I had a successor in place. So all of that ended up working out well.
So one of the things you were saying at the beginning was, there really isn't any room for me to advance in this career that I'm in. What is the advancement that you would think with massage therapy? Because for me, massage therapy, there ain't nowhere to go. It's all lateral, right? I may acquire more knowledge. I may change around my practice a little bit. I may niche down if I do that. But the bottom line, I feel like massage therapy, for the most part, if you're making your money primarily providing service to clients and patients, everything's just lateral moves from there. There is no progression. I think we even brought that up on the podcast before. Someone was on the couch and I asked them, what does progression in this industry look like for you? Mm-hmm. So going from this scenario where you're like, there really isn't any kind of movement for me, to doing this where I see like there's really no movement. You tell me.
For me, it wasn't more so about there's going to be a lot more movement or advancement in massage therapy. It was a different industry. I knew the value of massage. I'd had massages before. When I was running more seriously, I had a therapist that I went to who alleviated a lot of the discomforts and functional or dysfunction that I was feeling through my lower body. And it was just something that I knew it was time for me to move on to something else.
Right.
And working for the next 20 years in technology, although I love being a consumer of technology, it wasn't something that I wanted to continue to support. So I was supporting technology in data centers. And that was a big, big responsibility.
Gotcha.
But then I also did an inventory of what I wanted to do, and it wasn't anything related to still being in my present employment situation. Mm-hmm. So that I decided I was going to move on, and my next working career was going to be more about people instead of processes and technology.
I get it. Makes a lot of sense.
It kind of started to answer my question, which really? Is really just why massage? Like going from working in technology, massage, I mean, massage therapists as a group, I don't know if we're the most tech savvy. Maybe I'm speaking just for me. Why massage? You said I'd had massages before, but was this something
you've
you
also had dentistry done
right.
before.
Was
right.
this something
well,
you had put
I mean,
a lot of...
a very good answer here.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I knew that I was going to need to go back to school. And 2 years I could handle. Something beyond that was not what I was willing to go past. Mm. So 2 years I could make that work. Mm-hmm. How did I decide on massage therapy? Well, I did a lot of internal work to say, what do I enjoy doing? What are the working conditions I like? Like there's a book that I read, the name escapes me now, but it helped with doing some worksheet work to say what type of working conditions do you like? Who do you like working with? Do you like indoor work, outdoor work? Do you like being your own boss? I mean, it went through a bunch of scenarios. Do you want remote work or work on an island or whatever? And I, by the end of the episode, maybe it'll come to me what the book was. But anyways, I went through this book and it helped to isolate things that I didn't want to do and then brought it back into what I did want to do. And again, the length of time that I was going back to school was a big factor. 2 years was about what I could do. So right. if there was a certificate that I could get, great, I could do that. There wasn't anything that I really had an interest in at the time. But I mean, I get restless after a couple of years too. So even now I'm like looking for what else can I do? What right. else can I do?
You said something really interesting to me because I don't think that way at all. You said something about you had a little bit of a meltdown when the CMTO said we're not doing exams this year, but then you kind of said to yourself like, why am I doing this? This is beyond our control. What's the point in having a meltdown anyway? I actually mm-hmm. prefer to have a meltdown and I enjoy having a meltdown in situations where I know I don't have any control. And that's where I enjoy having the meltdown because in situations where I have control, that's when I'm like, okay, I got to put on my big boy pants and find a solution here. But when I know there really isn't a solution, I wallow in that and I enjoy wallowing in that. It's such a weird go. And when you said that, that made me realize, I love it when I secretly love it when it is something that cannot be helped and I have no control. And then I will kick and scream it and throw a fit and everything else. But when it's something I do have control over, I tend to do that first and then buckle down really, really fast.
I'm just laughing.
Why? Why are you laughing?
Because
well, that was interesting.
I won't give it. It is interesting. I'm a little more like
made
Cindy,
think,
as you probably know,
yeah,
that, you know, when there's something that I absolutely can't control, then it's exactly what is the point? Let me focus
the
on the things I can control.
It's to let it out.
Well,
is to
I mean,
let it out because
you can let that out in different ways.
If it's something that I have a play in what the outcome is, then I got to get down to business, right? Then it's like, let's find a fucking solution now. But if it's something that I don't have any control of, that's like, let's enjoy there's no solution and I'm just going to complain about it for a very long time.
Well, I went through that too. It's
well,
not
yes.
that I didn't have a meltdown. I did. I had my moment, but then I had to regroup and say, it is what it is. Mm. COVID happened. Now what?
Now
and
what?
That's really, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, but that's when I started evaluating, okay, how can I still be connected to the massage industry, but I can't actually lay hands on people and my exams are canceled and I don't know when I'll be able to do them.
Well, this is the story I really actually wanted to tell. So I will tell from my perspective because then I want to hear what actually happened. So my perspective, as many people who have listened to us know, Mark and I, joined up with the people that have been organizing the Canadian Massage Conference for the last 17 years. And we sort of teamed up with them unofficially around the time of COVID. And Mark and I had taught at the conference like a couple years prior. So like we knew them, but we officially teamed up with them after COVID, like when we were allowed to start doing in-person conferences, we teamed up with them. When we got together with them during COVID, Cindy was already there. And I remember just asking, like, who is this woman who seems to know everything and is like behind the computer? And this, she was like this wizard just running things. And I was like, who is this person? And The original organizers, Scott and Monica, said, oh, she's great. She used to work for a big bank. I won't name the bank if we're not doing that, but she used to work for a big bank, and she... you know, they talked about how you ran big events and she does all this stuff with technology. And so she wanted to, she sold you pretty good. They said she's going to be a massage therapist and wants to be involved in massage. So she asked if she could volunteer for the conferences. And I was like, what? Like, you guys are the luckiest people in the world. Like, you think I have a horseshoe up my butt? Cindy just came over to them and said, like, hey, can I help you? And suddenly she knew how to do everything. Literally, that was my impression of you. I was like, who is this wizard? Like, how does she know how to do everything? So you can tell me how that happened and how you even knew them and how you got involved, because when I showed up in 2020, you're already there.
All right. Well, let's go back to 2020. Or even further back than that, one of the years that I was in massage school, and I don't remember if it was 2018 or 2019, but it was mandated, or at least that's how I remember it. It was mandated that we all attend the free Friday of the conference.
Right.
And I don't think it was both years that I was there. I think it was just one year, but it escapes me if it was the first year or second year. So anyways, went to the conference on the free Friday. I was probably one of only a handful of people who really were there because I wanted to learn and I wanted to see what was happening that weekend. And I came back on the Saturday and the Sunday and I sat in on a couple of the classes. I think one of them was an athletic performance class, and I can't remember what the other one was. But anyways, I was like, this is pretty cool. So when CMTO canceled our exams in 2020 or the first half of 2020, then My first initial thought was, okay, well, this is one way that I can still be connected to the massage industry is through the conference. But the conference is not happening in person this year. It'll happening virtually. But let me reach out to the organizer. So at that point in time, I really didn't know Scott or Monica, other than I'd seen them at the conferences and knew that they were behind putting on the show for the weekend. So I had reached out. And Monica had responded a couple days later. And anyways, we set up a time for me to come up to Hamilton, and I treated it like a job interview. I did my resume and I did my cover letter, and I had this with me. I showed up, and
I'm like not even surprised, by the way. Cindy is one of the most organized people you will ever meet in your entire. I'm not even surprised.
So, I mean, and this was not a paid position, remember this, but I still treated it like a job interview. So I had my resume. I remember meeting Monica, and then I handed it to her and she basically tossed it aside. She's like, we're just going to have a chat. So we had a chat and, we just went through a bunch of stuff. We found out that we both like motorcycle or ride motorcycles. So that was a common denominator there. And also I share the same birthday as her late father. So that was another thing that really into Pisces. So anyways, through our talking, I think it was probably only there for maybe half an hour or so. Anyway, she said, yeah, we could definitely utilize you, or utilize your skills. So that's kind of how that all started. And I got connected on our virtual platform. They were already in the midst of planning the 2020 conference in September. So this would have been March, I guess, that I was chatting with them. So they were just in the beginning stages of planning the September conference. So it kind of just spiraled from there and went really quickly into getting things underway and figuring out all the logistics and the back end of the platform. And that's kind of the history.
It's so funny to hear that, like, you literally joined them really around the same time that we did. So, like, our history with them is, I think the first time that you taught at the CMC, was it 2018 or was it 2019?
I don't know the years, man. The year before everything shut
down.
The year
before, okay, so it was 2019. Yeah, right, because in 2018, we taught at another massage thing.
Right.
But in 2019, Mark was
2017
invited.
2017 and 2018.
Right.
We were at a different.
So in 2019, Mark was invited to teach at the CMC, and he asked me to come along with him. So we kind of, like, I mean, it was really his class. He was the one listed, but I kind of, like, joined with him and taught. And so I got to meet them. They seem like really nice people. And then when we started our podcast in 2018, we also, like, had them on to promote the conference. So, like, yeah, we knew them kind of. And then, as you know, in 2020, everything shut down. And Scott kind of looked to Mark like, are you out of your mind? Because unlike everybody else that was just shutting things down, Mark was like, no, we're still here. We're still teaching. We started like, you know, converting everything to virtual. And eventually, you know, people were doing that. But Mark started like instantly. It was like, oh, here's, you know, here's what he's talking about. Because he felt like he had some control. Do I have control of COVID? No, fuck, that sucks. But I can have control if my business is still running. So he figured out a way and got to it. And we started, you know, pumping out virtual classes and free events and all this stuff. And so then Scott connected with him and said, do you think we could run a virtual conference? And Mark was like, absolutely. So I guess the two of them started working. And then it was Monica, I guess, who found the virtual platform. And the speed at which you learned that thing, Cindy, made me think that you had been around a hell of a lot longer. Because as I said, when I got there, so I came to help work behind the scenes at that September 2020 conference. Or no, this is now 2021. I'm
confused on the year so much.
2020 was the one in the hotel.
We taught in person.
Yeah.
Then there was a year that I did a virtual from the Holiday Inn in a hotel.
That was 2020.
Room. Then there was the year that some of the stuff was done. No. There was a year that some stuff we used one of the ballrooms in the Holiday
That was still 2020, because in 2020 they did a pre-conference in the summer.
Right.
And then they did the actual conference. All right,
so the pre-conference in the summer is when I was in a hotel room. Then we actually did it. And then some of that stuff was done live and some of the other stuff was pre-recorded. I get it. Okay, now I'm
so 2021 is when my earliest memory of meeting Cindy. Maybe we met in 2020, but my memory like that sticks out to me is showing up behind the scenes at Cardin. And so now, you know, Cindy had been working with Scott and Monica now over a year.
That's where we went live.
Yes. And we went
virtual live.
Okay. And I remember showing up at that event and Cindy had to go somewhere. She had a commitment. So I think you had to maybe go to a wedding or a birthday. Like you had a big event that you had to go to.
It was a wedding.
Yeah. So she had to leave for a certain amount of time.
Right. And I had a
few. And Monica said to me, can you be Cindy while she's gone? And so Cindy took, you know, 15 minutes. She showed me the back end of the platform and she's like, it's super easy. You do this. And I'm like, okay, I'm a quick learner. I can figure this out. Within 10 minutes of Cindy being gone, I fucked something up.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
It was quick to recover.
It was fine. Everything was fine. It all worked out. But anyway, so since then, Cindy still works with the conference. And honestly, I think sometimes she keeps the four of us on track more so than we do ourselves. So this I got to know. Like, I understand you wanted to stay connected to massage. But once you started, like, helping with the organization of the conference, like, is this something you enjoy doing? Is this something that comes easy to you? Like, what do you get out of working behind the scenes at these kinds of big events?
What a great question. Yes, I enjoy doing it. Otherwise, I wouldn't still be doing it because like nobody's twisting my arm that I need to be doing all of this work. There's a few reasons. One is having the connection to people that I can learn from. Mm-hmm. So learn other techniques and what people are known for. Doing something a little bit different than always doing hands-on treatment, which don't get me wrong, I love that. But I also look at what else can I learn and where else might I want to expand to within the industry. And then it's just great to meet other therapists. Like part of the conference and having the networking and doing the variety of things like we do, like you guys have planned, Mark, the brainchild of a lot of the things that we're doing these days. It's wicked to be part of something like that, where it's just evolving every year and it's not the same conference. Even from year to year, it's not the same conference, no matter the fact that we're doing like two conferences a year, they're all going to be different.
Yeah.
And they've all got a different element to them that I think people, it's that wow factor that happens. It's not something that you're going to always plan for. And so I think it's just appealing to me. It's really great to be part of.
That's really cool. And anybody who's ever had to email us, you know, if something went wrong, if you accidentally purchased the wrong ticket, if you needed to transfer something, if you couldn't figure out how to book your hotel. Most of the time, you're communicating with Cindy. Mm-hmm. Like, I think most people know that. Yeah. Anytime you send an email, Cindy is like so on top of everything, which I don't understand how you find the time. How many clinics are you working at now, Cindy?
I am at 2, if we don't include Hamilton once a week. The Hamilton really is to do conference work, but I treat a couple people while I'm there because it makes sense too. But primarily, I have a practice in St. Catharines and then a secondary in Beamsville.
Nice.
So what does your practice look like? What kind of therapist have you become with all of this education that you get to absorb all the time?
Yeah, because you take a whole bunch of stuff, right? And the stuff is not even just stuff that lands you on a table. Sometimes it lands you on the floor. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's you on top of somebody on a table. It's like all over the place.
And that's the exciting part of it. So I knew when I finished school that because I went to school later in life, I was in my 40s when I went there. I also understood that the longevity of a massage therapist is dependent on how well you use your body and not taxing your joints with the hands and the wrists and whatnot. So working smartly. And after a couple of years of doing Swedish massage, that wasn't really what I wanted to continue doing. So then I got a little bit more involved with Thai massage. Thai on the table, Thai on the floor. So I've got a practice that is, I'm going to say right now it's 60% table and 40% mat. A lot of that I learned from Robert Gardner through listening through one of your live streams. Michelle in Waterloo, her and I did a couple of apprenticeship sessions while she was apprenticing with Robert. So I have learned a lot through that element in March. So just a few weeks ago, I took a table tie certification course with Andre. So I am more going the direction of Thai massage. And I've got some goals for 3 years from now with Thai massage that I won't reveal yet, but we'll let it be known that I said it here. And 3 years from now, see if my thought, my goal has actually come to come to fruition. So that's the direction that I'm headed in, is more of using my body better so that I have the longevity. I can still stay active, but I can still be effective with the treatments and get the outcomes for the people or for the clients. It also looks like additional education. So at least twice a year, I want to be doing something related to expanding my knowledge base and skill set that help along. I think if I do anything more than twice a year, it's going to be a little much, especially with the number of conferences that are underway for planning right now.
There's a lot of conferences.
So I want to ask you, this just popped into my head. I want to ask you guys, both of you guys, this question. So there's a couple different schools of thought when it comes down to goal setting and outcomes and achieving. One of the schools of thought is don't say anything to anybody about anything. And I think a big part of that comes the psychology of when you say something out loud, like, I'm going to do this. There's a big part of you that actually feels like the goal has been accomplished. And therefore, you put in much less effort into doing so.
Interesting.
And the other side of it is tell everyone, and that way you can be held accountable. I want to know where you sit on most things. Obviously, not wanting to say what you want to do with this Thai stuff might fall into the first, but is that generally how you guys make decisions on achieving goals? Like, what camp do you sit in, Amanda? Cindy, what camp do you normally sit in? And then let's hear it from there.
Am I going first then?
Sure.
All right. I think I actually kind of flip-flop on this, and that's really a crappy answer, and I'm sorry about that, but there are certain things that sometimes I feel the need to keep to myself because sometimes I think that people might not understand the vision I have right away, nor do they need to, but sometimes I think when I'm talking about it too much, I'm opening the door for everybody else's thoughts and opinions and input, when if I haven't quite figured out a way to present it to the world that makes sense to everybody right away, I don't think it's ready to be presented to the world. So sometimes I just like to keep things to myself, and I know that there's a direction I want to move and I'm working on it, but I don't really want to give information because I don't want to hear anybody else's chatter. Like, I want it to be really an internal thing.
Okay.
But then there's the other side where if I decide to do something where I've made a decision. This is where I have an end destination. Like, this is where I'm going to be at this time and this is happening. Then I'm happy to tell as many people as possible. And at that point, I don't care whether I'm getting support and encouragement. Of course, that's what you want, but I don't care whether I'm getting support and encouragement or I'm getting people saying, but have you thought of this, this, this? Because I've already made up my mind and this is my destination and this is what I'm doing. And I'm happy to tell you, because if I've hit that point, I'm going there, and I'm more than happy to let people know. And maybe it does fuel me a little bit and give me some sort of motivation to keep going. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
You didn't answer it. So yeah.
Yeah, 1,000%. I'm right with you that, Amanda.
Thank you.
On all of that stuff. In addition to that, I think for me, unless I have a lot of clarity around what that vision looks like, I really don't want to share it with anybody yet, because I don't want the outside voices persuading me in a different direction. If I have that clarity on something, absolutely, I'm going to share it. But until I know, I'm a little bit, I hold back. I just keep it to myself and kind of think about what direction do I want to go? What tasks do I need to do if I want to make this happen? What's my timeline? There's some self-doubt that happens in there. So you got to kind of talk yourself out of it. It's that little inner voice that says, am I doing this or am I not doing this? But I'll tell you one thing. One of the quotes that I've held true to for a long time has been, and that's really been the catalyst for when I made changes to go back to school. It was, if not now, when? And I talked for a lot of years prior to making the decision to go back to school. I talked for a lot about, I'm going to do this. I got to make a change. Like, I'm not happy doing what I'm doing. It's spilling over into my personal life and my weekends and whatever. Until I actually took action on that, doing it now, then nothing was going to happen. So it's the realization that you've got to make a choice and take action on that choice if you want something to get better. So the if not now, when is a quote that I think I've got it written on one of my mirrors in the house somewhere, because it's a reminder of stop talking about it or stop thinking about it and take some action.
Yeah. I love the if not now, when. And Mark is always a big part of that for me when I make it, because if I'm going to tell somebody something, it's going to be him, right? If there's something that's on my mind, I might say something to him and it might be a whole bunch of jumbled thoughts and he has this confused look on his face.
My face always looks confused.
he'll be really confused, but I know that, you know, he will give perspective. And I mean, his opinion I value, because anything I do ultimately affects both of our lives, right? So his opinion I want to hear, right? That to me isn't an outside voice. That's in fact a very inside voice. I need to hear what that voice has to say. And I know really his tone is always going to be supportive of me, even if he's like, well, what about this? Have you thought of this? It's always supportive. But his mentality is always, if not now, when? Because when I say something to him, even if it's like a thought that I haven't even really quite figured out yet, if there's nothing solid there, and I'll say to him, hey, I was thinking that this might be a good move. Literally by the end of the day, he's already done all the research, and you can check here and you can call this person and I can get you this. And you know, this only costs this much money. And I was like, whoa, like I was just coming to you with a thought. And he's like, yeah, but it's a good idea. Let's do that. And I'm like, what just happened here? And so, but it keeps me moving forward. It keeps us moving forward. It keeps us doing things. Another thing on top of that, if not now, when, I mean, if we're looking at motivating factors when it comes to goals, is a lot of people can say the words, like say the word priorities, but sometimes I'm not sure if people actually understand what that really means. Like, do you ever really sit down and think about what do you really prioritize? Like, what do you want out of this thing? Like, you want this thing, but what do you want to get out of it? Because that has been really helpful for me in trying to figure out what my next move is going to be, is like, what are my top priorities right now? What do I want to get out of work? What do I want to get out of this? What do I need from this? And it makes you really realize things that are not super important and don't need as much energy that you've been putting into them. It just helps with a little bit of clarity. So priorities, and I mean, if not now, when? Like, deadlines, timelines, like we're only on Earth for a short amount of time. Like, when are you going to do these things? Make a plan and start moving. And if you need help doing that, call Mark. He'll make the plan for you.
I never want anyone's input when I'm in the building phase. Because right. when I'm in the building phase, I got a vision of what I want it to be and look yep. like and sound like. And it's not till it's almost a finished product. That's when I'm happy to have someone or many people give their opinion, take a look, maybe consider this. But when I'm in build mode, anyone can tell me anything and I've ignored you completely.
Yep.
Right? I won't even entertain the thought because I'm like laser focused on this, whatever this is. It's probably a horrible idea and it probably wastes a whole lot of time. But at least at the end, I feel like I've done it the way that I really, really wanted to do it. And now I'm going to have someone come in and help me with the icing on the cake because I suck at the icing.
I think that I understand that mentality a lot. Like, for example, sometimes it might seem like I'm brushing somebody off or I'm, you know, like I like to answer people's questions right away. So if someone sends me a text message or sends me an email, I might answer it right away. But very oftentimes I either answer it by saying like, I mean, I did this to Cindy today. She sent a question. I was like, I don't really know how to answer this. And I sent her back a list of questions, but I will answer something right away. But the reason I'm bringing up the question thing is this happened to me today where somebody started talking to me about a project. And it's not something that I'm like really, I was really in the mindset to talk about in that moment. Like right. It was like, no. I didn't want to hear any of it. So I responded with, okay, let me take a look at my calendar and see this or whatever. And Monica was with me and she turned to me and she goes, Amanda, that's the weekend of our conference. Like I was so checked out of this conversation. I didn't even hear the dates because I wasn't ready to talk about this. So I was like, oh yeah, let me take a look. And she's like, Amanda, we're not even going to be in this province. That's the week of our Calgary Canadian Massage Conference. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that helps with everything. I can't help.
Yeah, like if I'm cooking, which never happens, but imagine that I'm cooking something.
No, you're not.
I don't want someone standing over me saying more salt. Yeah. I want to finish the meal and I want them at the end of it to say, this would have been better if there was a little bit more salt. I much prefer that than someone hanging out over my shoulder saying more salt.
Yep.
But that's again, it probably is a horrible idea and a horrible way to go about doing things in an effective manner. But what do I know?
We will see if Cindy's vision came to reality. We'll do an update when, what did you say? How many?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah. My 3 year plan. So within 3 years, we'll see if I get to.
Does anyone know this 3 year plan?
No. It's actually only something that I thought about this year.
Sweet.
Or not this year, but this month. So that's still too premature to talk about because it's just in that infancy stage where I'm like, I think this is a good idea, but let's figure out what I need to do in order to make that happen if I really want to make that happen.
I hear you.
So currently, now that you're like, you know, mostly focused on Thai massage. We won't go into your 3 year plan, but you did say that you get bored really easily. So do you set up like short term things? Like how do you combat being bored when it comes to treating people? Like what are the things you do to keep yourself really engaged in massage?
Well, it's not the boredom in the hands-on treatments, it's more the style. So in school, we all learn to do Swedish massage because that's the first thing that you learn. And then it's once you get out of school and you branch off and you do you want to do sports massage or perinatal or concussion treatments or whatever. I didn't have that because one of the biggest pieces of advice that previous or massage therapist gave me in the early days is like, just get your hands on people and then you're going to figure it out. And it's taken a long time to figure that out. And I only just in the last year was more on like, oh, I really like the Thai massage. It's very active and it's a workout for me too. And I feel like the response from people is good. So that's what I want to still do. And then I want to do things that are unique positioning where in my region in Niagara, kind of sets me apart from other therapists. And I don't yet know what that means in terms of a marketing strategy or if I want to market it that way. I think that that's just going to come organically, and it's going to come naturally through some practice champions or whatnot. But right now it's just, I'm trying something new that's so far working out for me, and working out for people that I introduce it to, that being Thai massage. But I'm also thinking about doing, like acupressure and maybe the dolphin stim, the just things that aren't, that aren't the standard. If you're going to see a massage therapist for just massage, this is what you're going to experience. So I kind of want to do something different, if that makes sense.
So the 40% of people that you either have on the floor or you're going to do some sort of Thai type of work on the table, I'm assuming that the, I don't know why I'm assuming that those were not originally like Thai massage clients, that you had a conversation at some point and then had them try it out and then they switched over. How does that work for you? How do you get 40% of people, especially when you were coming from, I do Swedish massage?
I actually had an offering on my online booking for mat massage. It might have been in how I phrased the description. And so the very first clinic that I worked at, I wasn't able to do that because a mat requires, like, it's a 4x8 foot mat. It requires extra space. So when you've only got so much room in a treatment room, it's just going to be table. So I had an opportunity to move to another clinic that offers a treatment room for a table. And then there's a larger space where the mat was. And in talking to the clients that I had at the first clinic who knew that I was moving, I gave them an offer to try out the mat Thai massage. And that's kind of how that all started. And then it's just been through, as I'm talking to people on the table, I'm like, you know what? I can really do a bit more deeper work in the flexibility if we can transfer you to the mat. So it just happens sometimes in conversation, and sometimes people have a curiosity of what, let me experience this.
We've had Robert on before. We've known him for a little bit at a time. He always talks about that when he's got someone on the table. He's like, well, you know what? How about we just try it like this? Like, we can go back to what you came here for, but let's give this a try and let's see if you like it. Mm-hmm. And if you like it, then we can rock and roll with this. And if you want to go back to the other thing, we could do that too. And then, you know, the way he expresses it, a lot of people, once they feel it a different way, then they're like, okay, I kind of like this. Let's go with it.
That's exactly it. And what's another value to people is that they don't have to get undressed on the table. Yeah. This is all treatment, fully clothed, just wear loose, comfortable clothing that you can move in. And there's a lot of people, surprised me actually, there's a lot of people who prefer that style better because they feel more comfortable and they get a lot more time on the table. I won't say a lot more time, but reduce the time. Right. It's not a reduction in time because you're not spending the time getting dressed and undressed. But yeah, that's exactly it. Is let's try something. So I'll put somebody in side lying and we'll do some shoulder work. And then I'll have them stand up or sit up and compare, how does your one side feel to the other side? And they're like, oh, that feels great. I have more movement in my shoulder. And I'll be like, kind of using Robert's words. Okay, well, would you like to do that on the other side? Yes, please. You know, it's that kind of thing. It's like, let's try it first and no issues. If you want to go back to doing the traditional table massage, we'll do that. If not, if this is working for you, we'll do that. And I'll, even at the end of the treatment, I'll say, if you liked the work that we've done here today and you want to do more of it, let's do more of it.
You probably get a lot less perverts too.
Well, I haven't had too much exposure to that, but yes, I would say so. Yeah.
I mean, the dude that wants you to touch his wiener is the dude that can't wait to take his
Swedish
clothes
massage,
off.
Yeah.
Right. Can't take my clothes off. That's what I want.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You mentioned at the beginning, Cindy, that part of the reason that you got into, I know. How did I know you'd have to laugh at the
funny
word? You mentioned that, you know, doing this type of work, part of the reason that you got into taking these type of courses is because you knew, especially as a mature student, you were going to have to look at career longevity and biomechanics and using your body. Do you find that physically you have more energy after doing like a Thai massage or some sort of mat based work? Do you feel like it's similar to the Swedish treatment? Like, how do you feel physically doing this? And do you feel like for people who want to get into this, they are in for a big surprise with how physical it can be for the therapist?
Actually, I do not find at the end of, so if I just compare, let's say, four treatments of a Swedish massage in a day, and I'm talking like 1 hour treatments versus two or three Thai massages, I do not feel as exhausted doing the Thai style massages than I will by doing the Swedish massages. And I'm not sure exactly what that is, and there's probably research around it. But just for me physically, I am less taxed at the end of a day with doing the mat massages. And I also feel that I'm more open, that my joints, my muscles are less tense than if I was doing standing over top of somebody on the table. Cause you have to remember I can use different points of contact and multiple points of contact. If I'm treating somebody on the floor, and I can use my foot, I can use my knee, I can use like my shin, whatnot. There's a bunch of advantages to being able to utilize body weight on the floor versus trying to use body mechanics, especially if you don't have a hydraulic table. And that's one thing that I ran into early on, is not having a hydraulic table and trying to use a stationary table and getting enough leverage on somebody to do work. I found it more difficult to do, and that'll be a different argument for everybody, or a different input from everybody. But for me personally, it's more challenging to do the work on a table, a stationary table.
I agree.
I was at a table Thai massage workshop this morning into this afternoon, and there was three different instructors that were teaching techniques, and the students were, I think, predominantly RMTs, and they were teaching them how to incorporate some of their techniques, whether it was, using different points of contact and different massage techniques or stretching on the table. Mm-hmm. And these three made this look so easy. Like they just looked so graceful. And I mean, I'm sure that takes a lot of practice, but it was really funny. One of them, he put his client into some kind of position, and he said, "And look how easy this is for me." He's like, "You know, I've got this hand free. I'm using all my body weight." He's like, "I could sit here and have a drink. I could smoke a cigarette." He's like, "Don't smoke a cigarette, but you can."
Well, maybe you should. No, I totally get it. If I had been exposed to mat-based work way earlier into my career, or Thai massage, I think I would have gone that route, because as soon as I kind of figured out what it was all about, I started to do a lot of that stuff.
Yeah,
I totally flipped it up, and it's a different type of effort as a therapist, completely different. And one thing about Swedish massage that I feel very different about mat based work. With a Swedish massage, I feel like the therapist always feels like they have to be busy, that they always have to be doing a bunch of stuff. Versus mat-based work, you're doing a bunch of stuff, but you don't necessarily have to always constantly look busy. And you always don't necessarily feel like you're constantly busy, but there's still tons of therapeutic value in there.
Yeah.
Right? It's like when I teach a cupping course and you know, we put on a stationary cup. I'm like, there's tons of value in just leaving this cup here and letting it do its thing. It doesn't need to be all of this stuff.
You don't need to be doing all the fancy stuff.
Or I'm using, instead of like blanketing in the area and a whole bunch of movement, I'm taking these two cups and I'm just kind of moving them around on, off, on, off, on, off. And I'm like, it's boring as shit as a therapist, but I don't want you to think about it from the therapist standpoint. What's exciting for me in these moments? There's tons of therapeutic value that's happening, and the patient on the table, as bored as you might be, feeling you're not doing a hell of a lot of anything. I'm not saying that that's what's happening with time, but you might feel like you're not doing a hell of a lot of anything, but the patient on the table is like, this is glorious. Like, this is amazing. So you may be having someone in a position where you're stretching the hip into internal rotation and you've got an elbow into the piriformis and you're hanging out there for a little bit. In other words, you're not overly busy.
Yeah.
But there's still tons of value in that, and the client feels that value.
Do you think it's the grease? It makes us feel like we got to keep moving.
I hate the grease. When you were saying, like, what do you guys like about it? One of the things I would always say is I hate fucking feeling greasy after. I hate that sensation. I can't stand it. So I'm proud of you for at least walking away for 40% of the time.
So here's an interesting thing, though. When I receive massages, I love the table massages with the lotion. Now, I'm kind of particular on the fact that when I'm treating and I am using an oil, there's only one oil that I like because it's not, it doesn't feel greasy and people don't leave feeling like they're gonna have to have a shower afterwards. But I also like receiving Thai massage, like different styles of massage. And I will see different therapists because they utilize a different style of massage that I like for different scenarios. Like when I'm in my running phase, I will go to a therapist that's more focused on sports massage. If I just want a hot stone massage, I know somebody to go to for that. Like I love receiving all of that stuff. Just let me get massages. But I don't always like doing the linens and lotions massages. And Mark, know you were doing when you were treating people, you were doing a lot of this stuff on the floor. You'd have them do stuff movement on the floor because that was active and it works. And I like that active style of treatment. I don't always like the passive stuff that's just on the table with lotion and moving people.
Yeah, I hear that.
Through deep tissue and whatnot. But so it's different. And I like the difference that it allows me as well. And it's part of my growth. I like that. And that's what's appealing.
Well, you and Robert and Michelle kind of all said the same thing that, you know, people do have a preconceived idea of what massage is. So a lot of people are coming in expecting the linens and the lotion and the soft music and all of that. But once they get to experience something like mat-based work or Thai massage or table Thai or any of these sorts of things, however you decide to practice, once they experience that and feel the effects, then it's like, oh, okay, this is also massage therapy and I like this, and people will become more open to it. But yeah, initially people are thinking, you know, let me take off my clothes and you rub oil all over me.
No, I also do cupping as well. So there's cupping, and then I was trained last year in the instrument assisted soft tissue. So I also utilize that where there's a therapeutic indication. So it is not just all about the lotion and rubbing. Well, I don't like to use the word rubbing, but you know, what I mean, it's the standard massages that you first learn, the Swedish massages, without any of the extra continuing education.
How do you feel about the whole concept of a routine though? So like, for example, like an introduction to a Thai massage course, they're probably showing you routines, right?
Yes.
Here's a routine in prone, here's a routine in supine, here's a routine in side lying, here's a routine in seated. How do you feel about this whole idea of routines, and that's how you're kind of introduced to it? Do you think how do you feel about that?
I think it all starts with the routine, but the whole evolution of that is to give you some foundational work, not to do the entire routine. I mean, I would compare that to in school when we all learn the routine to do a relaxation massage.
Oh, that's
a good
question.
Starting prone and starting with the back and blah, blah, blah.
So did you guys learn a general full body relaxation Swedish massage routine when you were in school?
I didn't learn it like that. But if you were to watch myself and all of my classmates, even if you put us in separate rooms and said, you know, do a 1 hour general Swedish massage for relaxation, they probably all would have looked very similar.
Looks similar, right? In terms of body
exactly
parts
what,
and orders of which you're
yes,
doing?
Yes, like exactly what Cindy said. It was like we all kind of felt the need to like start in prone and start with the back. And if you know you have 60 minutes, it's like, okay, you're going to probably spend 20 minutes here, 15 minutes here. Like we all kind of got into that sort of, but we weren't ever told, I'm going to teach you a routine.
Yeah, because when I taught it, I didn't teach it like that at all. I didn't call it a routine. I didn't make it sound like a routine. And when students would stray from what other people were doing, I encouraged it. I was never about like, this is a routine. But you hear this a lot from the cats in the States, right? When they're learning massage, like, oh yeah, this is routine. When Christian Ramirez was on the couch talking about how he learned massage and it's routine and blah, blah, blah. And
well, it's again, because when you're learning massage, think about when you're learning the foundations, you learn things like you want to establish rhythm, right? So you're thinking rhythm. And so then you get into that and the whole class is kind of doing the same, you know, we're all listening to the same music. We're all practicing together. We kind of all get into a similar rhythm. Then again, you know, you've got 1 hour to do this and we got to work on these parts. So we all, you know, you just do the quick math in your head and you can kind of break down like, this is, you know, how much we're going to spend on each body part. And again, there was always this notion of you know, the idea for every massage, you want to have a part where you are decreasing sympathetic nervous system firing, where you're in, you know, you're promoting relaxation. Mm-hmm. So then you start thinking about endings, you know, starting with something really soothing and ending with something really soothing. So everybody just instinctively would end with like a head, neck, shoulders, because that's really relaxing, you know, and you end with, you know, maybe a little scalp or face. Like everybody did that. We weren't taught this is the routine and this is the order, but it just happened. And every student massage therapist ends up doing that.
Those are so good to receive, though.
Oh, they're great.
They are great to receive. But getting back to the routine aspect of the Thai massage or any massage, I think it's important to establish a foundation of techniques, but then take that foundation and use your intuition. Hang out a little bit longer in an area that you feel needs a little bit more. Andre was big in our table Thai massage course. He was very big on showing us additional techniques or trying something that he'd maybe never tried before, but somebody else was doing it and it looked good. So you just play and experiment with what feels good. And in the positioning, I think that's a big thing too, is in Thai massage, because it's movement based, there's a lot of movements that you can do where it takes you out of a quote unquote routine.
Yeah.
Because you're as long as you're being effective and you're hitting the right areas, that's really what it's more about. It's like utilize your clinical skill set to be able to do that and don't be too focused on routine.
Right. Know the rules so you can break them.
Right. And every massage is going to look different. I mean, from every relaxation massage is probably going to look different too. But everybody, if you got two people coming in and you're treating exactly the same condition, you're probably still not going to do the same techniques on somebody because maybe you don't have enough range of motion on one to be. Anyway, so there's all kinds of things. But yeah, it's less about routine and more about play around with stuff that feels good to both receiver and giver.
Again, I've watched so many Thai massage classes. I've watched demos, like just from doing filming with Massage Therapy Media and from being, you know, organizing the conferences. I've seen so much Thai massage. And one thing I've noticed about every class that I'm in is they're teaching you, like Cindy said, it's more about like the techniques, and the instructors today I felt were really good at explaining like why you would do it like this versus like this, and you know why their hand contact looks a certain way. Like they're not saying you have to do it like this, but it was like, you know, if you put your hand like this and you put your body like this, then you're using a lot less effort. I love how every Thai massage instructor I've ever met with
looks so relaxed.
They always call themselves lazy. It's like the goal is to expend as little energy as possible. I mean, that should be the goal for all of us, is, you know, working smarter, not harder. But Thai massage practitioners have this down to a science. It's like, how can I accomplish what looks like a really elaborate stretch for my client while I do nothing? Yeah, while I smoke a cigarette with one hand. Like, they're incredible. Andre calls himself the lazy therapist all the time.
I knew I should have started Thai massage sooner, but I kind of was smoking a lot, right? You can be outside and I can have a dart in my mouth. I've only done that once, given a massage and had a cigarette in my mouth.
You did?
Well, not this was
not a professional massage.
When I was in massage school, I ended up getting really friendly with one of our instructors, and we'd hang out all the time, like when I was finished school, and we ended up at his cottage one weekend, well beyond being in school, and where I'm a practicing therapist. And so we busted out the massage table, and so we were like, there's a bunch of us there, we were doing massages, and it was massages with cigarettes, massages with joints, massages with beer.
That's hilarious.
It was a good cottage go,
everybody just hanging out offering. This was before I was in the picture, by the way. I had no part of this drunk stoned massage festival. If anybody important is listening, I was not involved.
Oh, please.
I'm kidding. So what's next for you, Cindy, aside from the 3-year plan? Actually, no, I don't want to ask that. I want to ask the question that Mark hasn't asked anyone in a while, but it's one of our famous ones.
Lottery?
Yeah, because I mean, Cindy left a really, really well-paying job, a really high paying job and took a major risk. Like, yes, you can make a really great living in massage therapy, but she left a sure thing with money and benefits and stability.
So before you ask that question, what do your friends, your family, your circle think of this? Like, you're what? You're going to leave this and do what? You're going to go back to school for 2 years and do what? Where did you get any of that?
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. Mostly the support. But what was funny is the people that I worked with, especially when I was there in person and they hadn't seen me for a few days, because I think I worked Wednesday, Thursday, Friday afternoons or something like that. And Thursday afternoons, I was physically on site. The other days I was remote. But when I would make an appearance and I would connect with people and they'd be like, oh, I haven't seen you for a while. Have you been on vacation? And I would tell them, no, I'm back to school. And they'd be like, oh, are you taking your MBA? So I was telling them like, no, totally unrelated, nothing business related. And so there was total support on everything. I think it was a shock for some people that had known my history right from grad. My first diploma was in business marketing back in the 90s. And so my path right from that point until really when I went back to school for massage had always been in the business realm. So I think people that knew me for that period of time were a little surprised that I was doing something that was not business related.
Surprised, but supportive. Well, that's good. I mean, at least they were supportive. But yes, so back to this money question then.
Yes,
you left money because there was a lack of fulfillment. You didn't say you hated your job, just, you know, maybe a not as fulfilling as you wanted it to be, and you couldn't see that being your career forever. Now you are in a career where you love what you're doing. You get to explore new things. You've got a 3-year plan. What if you won the lottery this week and now you don't need to work? You don't need to make money. What are you going to do?
I don't think that I would stay in massage. Well, maybe I would stay in massage, but not full time. I think I would cut back on that. But man, that's a pretty loaded question. I started flying lessons when I was in, when was that? In college, back in the late 90s. I think I would continue flying lessons just because it was so enjoyable to do that. And I had this really wild ass dream that I was going to learn to fly a helicopter, but I had to do the airplane lessons first before I flew a helicopter. I don't think I would go that far again, but I think I would do the flying lessons. Travel always plays a big part in it. I'd love to see like the greenery of Ireland and I've had a couple of vacations to British Virgin Islands sailing. I'd do more of that. Being on island time, there's just nothing like being on nobody's schedule.
I can't help but to chuckle every time I hear helicopter because I keep thinking Gloria from Gloria from Modern Family.
What's that word? Yeah. That's one of the most interesting answers we've ever heard, though. Majority of people say like, oh, I would still want to do something. You know, they'll say the usual things like I'll travel or this or that, or I'll donate to charity. But flying lessons, nobody has ever said that they would do flying lessons.
It wouldn't be my only thing, but that would be something that I would want to finish. I've got only 5 hours in and I never took the ground school. I went right for the in plane lessons, which was still very cool as a 19, 20 year old, but it was also very expensive. That's why I've only got 5 hours in, but I think I'd have to redo all of that again. But I really enjoyed my time flying. It was just a very expensive hobby that I wasn't going to be able to sustain working part-time and going to school full-time.
I don't know why I never pegged you as a daredevil considering you ride motorcycles, but how did you get into riding motorcycles? How long have you been riding?
Do you consider motorcycles daredevil work?
Well, yeah, I suppose at one point. Well, maybe not daredevil, but it is more risky, I find, every year, especially with new people that have just come out of it's in the spring, especially new people that have just gotten their motorcycle license and now they're like on the road and we've got more distracted driving that's happening. So I wouldn't say I'm fearful about riding, but I'm well aware that there's all kinds of distractions year after year. And I've been riding since 2001. So a long time. And how did I get into it?
Yeah.
Good question. when I was a teenager and I grew up in Winnipeg, I had a cousin who rode a sport bike, and my brother and I had been with him and his friend. They had taken us on the back of their motorcycles, and we had gone to downtown Toronto, downtown Winnipeg. And we were riding around for a bit, and I just had the shit eating grin on my face. Like, this is fun. Full face helmet. I think we were traveling at a pretty high rate of speed on the highway trying to get there. I can't tell, but when you can't move your head in that helmet, I'm pretty sure it was too fast. So that was my first real exposure. And then in either late 90s or in 2000, my dad and my brother went for their licensing, the weekend rider course.
Yep.
But I didn't find out about this until after they had finished, because I guess they didn't think that I'd have any interest in it. But they told me that they did. And that same weekend I went and wrote, or that same, the next day I went and wrote my M1 test, and I enrolled in the school for the following weekend, because mm-hmm. at that point there wasn't such a wait list and you could get in right away. So I remember it was the second weekend of April in 2001, and I took the weekend course, and it was drizzling, and I figured, well, this is probably a really shitty time to learn to ride, but it was maybe the better option to learn to ride in pretty foul weather. And so that was my first exposure to riding a motorcycle. My brother went with me, I guess, a couple of days after I had finished that course, and I went and bought a Honda EX500, which was like the pre-ninjas. Mm-hmm. And I rode that one season, but my body was just aching from the riding position of that bike. Like, sport bikes and me don't agree. So that was the only sport bike that I had, and I had it just for the one season. And then I sold that for like $100 more than I bought it for, so it didn't owe me anything. And then since then I've had cruisers, and I think I'm on my maybe ninth bike.
Nice.
Since that time period, but this one I've had since 2015, so I'll still hold on to it for a little while longer. It doesn't owe me anything.
I'm the only loser that doesn't
ride.
Well,
I never rode bikes until I got my M1. I decided for my birthday that year I'm gonna go get my bike license. So I didn't purchase the instruction, or whatever it's called, the whatever manual it is.
Manual,
right?
Yeah.
I went to the test center. I bought the book at the test center. I read it while I sat there waiting for them to call my number. And then I went and did my written, because your M1 is just written, and I got my M1. And then, similar to you, within the month, I took a weekend course, and then that gives you your M2. But in that small window, I had a buddy who had what did he have, man? He had a Suzuki GSXR, mm-hmm. and he would just lend it to me. After having my M1, he'd be like, hey, just take my bike for the day, or take my bike for these next 2 days. And so I experimented around that, and that's when I was like, I fucking need to take a course. And it was great. After that course, you learn to ride pretty good. And then from there, Bob's your uncle.
Bob's your uncle. Yeah. Well, on that note, Cindy, I honestly cannot believe we didn't have you on the podcast until now. But now at least I feel like I know you a little more. As I said at the beginning, she's here all the time because the conference, anybody who's had anything to do with the Canadian Massage Conference knows who Cindy is. If you've been to any of the conferences, we call her the prize fairy because she gives out all the prizes. And also, because she's so into education, she also takes the classes when she's there. So you'll see her face at the reception, then you'll see her on stage giving out prizes, then you might see her in one of your classes. But and she's always here helping us with stuff, because I mean, like I said, she's some wizard that just knows how to do everything. So we love having her around, and I can't believe we haven't had you on the podcast up until now. But now I feel like I know you more. Before, you were just this wizard that appeared.
You guys could have done this without this whole setup.
We could have. But now I feel like I know everything. Yeah, this was way more fun.
And now I feel a certain amount of accountability that I need to create this 3-year plan so that in 3 years we can talk about it.
Well, we will definitely do that. We'll come back and find out what it was, or you will reveal it at CMC 2025.
Dun, dun, dun.
All right. Well, thank you again, Cindy. This was fun.
Thank you. This was fun.
Right on. You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. Peace.